CBS Radio's The Sky.
The Sky.
Now back to Fire It Up with CJ. Be a force for good. And fire it up with CJ. Log on, fireitupwithcj.com. And call CJ now.
248-545-7685.
Believe. On CBS Radio's The Sky. Sky.
Best-selling author Dr. Will Tuttle live here on CBS Radio today talking about the spiritual journey that led up to writing his book, The World Peace Diet. I'm Cassandra from CBS Radio The Sky, and now we're going to go right back to CJ.
Hey, welcome back, everybody, to the Fire It Up with CJ show. So I'm CJ Liu, and we are talking to Dr. Will Tuttle, and we're talking about his spiritual journey, which in the 70s took him to a place called The Farm, which was the largest hippie commune in the world in 1975. And after that, he became a Zen monk, and now he's on his journey of getting folks to be more conscious and more loving and showing loving kindness to all living beings, including animals. So welcome back, Dr. Tuttle.
Thank you, CJ. Great to be with you.
So tell us about your path. I mean, I can't imagine what first led you to go on a spiritual journey. And then when you look back at your spiritual journey, what do you see were kind of the defining moments?
Yeah, briefly, you know, I think back in the 70s, we had the Vietnam War, we had the beginning of the environmental movement, and I was going to college in Maine. I was born and raised in Concord, Massachusetts, so there was this whole feeling of Emerson and Thoreau and Alcott, the transcendentalists, and meditation, I think. I started getting extremely disillusioned, I guess, with the materialism and the consumerism and the corruption of our society, and I didn't really want to go and get a job in a corporation after going to college and I was studying business. And
So I
ended up reading books that talked about the idea that it is possible for us as human beings to awaken to a higher level of consciousness. And that just rang true for me. I thought this level of consciousness that we're at, which is basically self-centered, looking out for number one kind of thing, is miserable, really. And so I began reading books from India and Asia and also the Bible. I realized what Jesus was saying was exactly the same thing, essentially, to awaken to the truth that we are beyond the usual programmed level of consciousness and to treat others with kindness. And so I started talking to my brother, Ed. I have a younger brother named Ed, about these ideas, and we decided we would go on a spiritual pilgrimage to try to attain a higher level of consciousness, and we figured we'd try to get to California. That must be 1975. That's where the higher consciousness was. We thought we'd go to San Francisco, maybe. And we got as far, actually, we got as far as Buffalo, New York, New England, and then, and it was October. It was getting, you know, freezing cold, and we decided just to head south. And so we actually walked every day about 15 miles a day with no money, just meditating every day, and it was an amazing adventure. And we ended up walking all the way down through upstate New York, Pennsylvania, West Virginia, Kentucky, and into Tennessee. And we ended up at a place called The Farm, as you said, which was the largest hippie commune in the world in 1975. And they were mostly people from California. And they were all, when I got there, they were all living on a totally plant-based diet. And that was it. I saw 1,000 people, basically, who were doing great. And they were not dying of a protein deficiency, you know, or a calcium deficiency or anything else. And they had children. A lot of them were vegan from birth, doing great, growing up healthy, strong, active. And so I asked them, you know, why are you doing this? And it seemed to just fit in with the spiritual teachings that I had been studying and with my own meditation to try to reduce violence. And they said, well, there's two main reasons. One is, there are a lot of people starving in the world, and the driving force behind the human starvation is people eating meat and dairy because we're feeding huge amounts of grain to animals to fatten them up while people starve. And that's not compassionate, and it's not good to do that. And I agreed with that. And then they also, and that's still true, of course, today, and they also said, and do you know what animals go through? when you eat them. And I said, well, you know, don't tell me. I don't want to hear
right.
it. And I remember this guy, you know, he just basically in like 1 minute, he said, the animals you're eating are hyper-confined in stinking sheds where they never see the light of day. They're routinely castrated without anesthesia. Their beaks are chopped off. Their tails are docked. They're mutilated, and then their babies are stolen, and then they're hung upside down and stabbed and killed. And I just somehow I just looked into this vast, unbelievably violent, brutal killing machine that we inflict these poor innocent animals on, and that was it. I said, I will never, ever, ever again eat any of this stuff. So I think for me, I just saw it's not food. I mean, this animal flesh is absolutely not food. It's violence and destruction and toxicity on every level, to animals, to ecosystems, to human beings, to the poor slaughterhouse workers that have to stab animals all day, and then they have the highest rates of suicide, drug addiction, and alcoholism, and spousal abuse. It brings out the worst in them. It's just devastating on every level. Mm-hmm. And I had this beautiful example right in front of me of 1,000 people that were thriving on a plant-based diet. So I, from that moment on, I never ate meat again in my life.
Mm-hmm.
And then eventually, a few years later, I did get out to San Francisco, and I was living in meditation centers, and I started to learn more in depth, really, the essential cruelty on dairy farms and egg operations. And so I became a vegan back in 33 years ago in 1980, and I've been a vegan ever since. And I did it originally, really always, actually, not for my own health, but for the health of the animals and other people. But the side benefit is I have been enormously blessed in my own physical health. I mean, I have enormous energy. It's just the greatest thing. I mean, if you want to be healthy, there's no better way than eat a plant-based diet. But that's really was it. It was, and I lived as a Zen monk, actually. I should have mentioned that maybe in 1984. I went to Korea. I shaved my head. I actually became a Zen monk. And I found myself in this, for the second time in my life, in a community that was vegan. You know, they didn't mm-hmm. eat any meat, dairy products, or eggs. They didn't wear any wool or silk or leather. And this was a community that had been living this way for about 700 or 800 years, you know, going back to the 1200s in Korea. And so I realized that what veganism is not some newfangled California hippie idea. It's an ancient human spiritual tradition that people have understood for millennia, for thousands of years, that if we want to awaken and live a life of kindness and happiness and joy and freedom and abundance on this planet, that the fundamental laws for that are kindness and compassion for others, that we're all interconnected, and that animals matter. I mean, animals, anyone knows who has a dog or a cat, you know, we know that these animals have feelings, they have interests, they do not like to be physically or psychologically or socially harmed. And that as we understand that, and as we live our lives and act, you know, with kindness, even towards those who cannot retaliate, I think that's the real test. Then we're worthy of not only of spiritual growth, but I think of creating a world of peace and harmony in our human relations. But if we treat animals in such violent ways, we are definitely going to do the same thing to each other. So I saw this very clearly at the farm, and then again when I was meditating in Korea. I mean, we were meditating from 3 in the morning till 9 o'clock at night every day, just deep meditation. And through that, I was able to free my consciousness from the programming of this culture.
Yeah.
And that's the greatest thing. Yeah, go ahead.
Yeah, I mean, to me, it seems like that's the first thing, is that you're saying that the culture that we live in is in this, you had described it in the first segment as a cultural trance. So the community, the farm community and the Zen community then gave you different cultures and to start having you question some of the original ideas that you had. That's what I'm hearing happen during your path. And what were the pivotal moments is that you started questioning, like, hey, wait a second. Why are all these people living, thriving, and healthy still, and they're not eating any meat? And what's the ideology behind it, which then opened your mind to a bunch of different ideas that you didn't even have, or a consciousness, which is why you started the journey to begin with, right? You're trying to get to a higher consciousness.
Exactly, and it's exactly right, CJ. And I'm so grateful to those people for creating an opportunity for me to see that, you know, because I realized that the only reason anyone eats meat, dairy products, and eggs is because of the community they're born into. It's not an idea we have on our own. We do it because the people in the community teach us to, and that's why we do it. So if we have an example of a different kind of community, then we can see another way of living that's actually infinitely superior to what we've been taught by this community. And I think our culture can actually evolve to a higher level as we model this, as we create communities like we're doing right now. In a sense, we're creating a little community here. This radio program is a community. Everybody who's listening, you know, we're together and we're thinking about this. And so we can go and we can help this compassion and sanity to spread in our society. I think that's the greatest gift we can give, not only to ourselves and our loved ones, but really to everyone.
Mm. And were there any people that really influenced and shaped, or is it just the community itself or the people that shaped your ideology?
Yeah, it was actually the communities themselves. That's where the people are actively engaged in making an effort to live lives of awareness and kindness and consciousness, and to individually raise their own level of awareness. That is the greatest spiritual teacher we can ever have. But within that context, I was blessed to meet some towering spiritual geniuses that had really broken through the barriers and illusions that most of us never do. And I think that was very helpful for me. Zen masters in Korea, for example, who really were free, and in the sense spiritually looking with eyes that are very different than the way most of us look at the world. We think that we're a material thing, you know, and we think we're a piece of meat. We're born and raised in a very materialistic culture that looks at us like we're just a thing that was born and will die. Mm-hmm. And when we get our consciousness beyond the cultural trance, we realize that what we are actually is far more than that. We are eternal awareness manifesting, in a sense, through a physical vehicle. And it's not just humans, it's animals too. All beings are manifestation of life. And as we see that, we begin to see the sacredness of all life and the sacredness of our own life, and that our life has meaning and value. And when we feel that, then we look to others in the same way, and we begin to respect them as well. And we begin to have confidence and self-respect and self-esteem that's beyond what we're taught in our own society. I think that's one of the big problems, is people don't feel good about themselves because we're forced to eat the flesh of terrified dead animals, and we feel bad about that at a very deep level. And so as a society, the destructiveness that permeates our society, I think, is a result of this killing 75 million animals every day for food, and freeing ourselves from that essentially is the beginning. So yeah, for me it was these great spiritual teachers that I met, and also reading. I think, for example, Krishnamurti had this great saying. He said, "It is not a good idea to be well adjusted to a profoundly sick society." Mm-hmm. And I think, you know, that basic idea, as we learn from spiritual teachers, either meeting them directly or through books, that we can question things. And I think that's the greatest gift we can give to each other.
Interesting. So in the next segment, we are going to be talking about how you deal. So, and that's a really great segue, because in some ways the challenge is, I think, for vegans is they live in a culture where in the United States where they're predominantly the minority. And so how do you how do you deal and stay well adjusted to a profoundly sick society? So
right.
I guess a vegan would see it. So in that next segment, we're going to talk about how vegans and vegetarians can live in peace and in harmony with a world dominated by meat eaters. So folks online, make sure to friend us at the Fired Up with CJ Facebook page to get a schedule of upcoming shows, articles, and coaching tips. We'll be right back.